Greetings, Binge Lords. This is Jason for Binge Movies. I am here with a special bonus feature. I'm talking to actor, writer, producer, performer, a man who's been on TV, a man who some would say is a pioneer of online new media content, and now a film screenwriter. He gets a story and writing credit of among a couple other folks. And probably the most impressive thing about him is not only is he in Hollywood, but he tweeted, "It's not my movie, it's our movie," which means he's actually probably a decent guy. I am here speaking with Luke Barnett. How you doing, my friend?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me.
Your most recent movie is called Faith-Based. Now, longtime listeners of this podcast would know we did a episode called Holy Shit Volume 1, where we ranked five of the worst Christian films. And that, as you know, that is a long, long list. one of the lines of your film is, "It doesn't have to be bad. It just doesn't have to be good." Which is a Margaret Cho line. So... You went on a diatribe, I'll just say it like that, on Twitter that I thought was both very revealing, very funny, and a mutual acquaintance liked it on Twitter. So then I saw you, and then I was like, this guy's funny on Twitter. I'd like to interview him. He's got a movie. And we share a common experience. I sent you a creepy DM. You answered it.
Oh, man. hey, people sneak into my DMs all day long, you know? I like how somebody sneaking into my DMs is never like some, you know, random woman wanting to like meet me. Yeah. It's always some like male podcaster. It's like, "Do you want to talk to me? I'm in Ohio."
I'm sorry, Luke. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. You're the fourth guy from Ohio to get into my DMs. Like, "Hey, man, can we talk?" Like, "Yeah, great." So when? Sunday morning? Perfect.
Yeah, Sunday morning, 8 a.m.? Perfect. Yeah. I don't even know where to start with you, man, because we're of a similar age. I think we have similar background-ish in the world. You've obviously gone on to, stardom. Right. So,
you know how lucrative the independent film world is.
Yeah. And I am one of four white male movie podcasters that you talked to from just Ohio this week, apparently. Yeah. So,
you know, officially, I think a group of white males is called a podcast.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Or the government. Either way. Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You are one of four credited writers on the movie Faith-Based, which is available right now on Amazon Prime. So if you have a Prime subscription, it's included and it's available for rent on VOD and a lot of other places too. You get the story credit. And I don't know what the experience is of the other writers, but I've been creeping on your Twitter for a little while. Was this the germ of this idea? Did it come from your lived experience, or was it a mutual lived experience between the screenwriters?
Well, I'm actually the only screenwriter on it. We basically got it, the three of us shared a story credit because we all really did develop like the general idea a lot. I'm actually the only credited like writing credit in the sense that I actually went off and wrote the screenplay. It kind of stems from both. I have a guy that I work with, both the guys. The other actor in the movie, Tanner Thomason, and the director, Vince Michelli, we've all worked together for a long time in various capacities. Vince and I have worked together. We have a company. We partner on production stuff. And the actual idea kind of stemmed from our first movie that I wrote and he directed was a horror comedy called Fear, Inc. And it starred Abigail Breslin. And this was a movie that basically was shot with credit cards and as independent as it gets. Like, we put this together just with the idea that like we're going to make it no matter what, and we got really lucky that it premiered at Tribeca and kind of it became number one on iTunes at one point. Like, it just kind of did well for us.
No, it's a pretty I would say it's a very well-known independent film.
Yeah, it's got a very fun kind of culty fan base, but what's interesting is that I think we naively thought that like if you have a movie that goes to Tribeca or Sundance or South by Southwest, you're going to get a Marvel movie or a series or some sort of like huge thing.
Right.
And you know, a year after the movie came out, we had been pitching other movies and we'd set up a couple TV things that just never got to air. But for the most part, you know, 2 years later, that hadn't happened.
Yeah.
And then God's Not Dead 3 came out. And literally, like, I'll never forget sitting in this office. We had just come back from like this pitch meeting. We were pitching this kind of dark comedy thriller movie, and they passed on it. And then God's Not Dead 3, this article came out in the Hollywood Reporter that it made like, you know, $22 million or something. And I just like looked at Vince and I said, we should just make a bad Christian movie. And when that movie makes $20 million, we can make, you know, 20 of our movies. And that idea kind of started off as a joke and eventually is the movie that you saw, Faith-Based, which is, for those listening that don't know the movie, it's basically about two guys who come to the realization that all these bad Christian movies still tend to make lots of money. And so they set out to make one of their own, even though they're not religious and they don't even know how to make movies.
Okay, so this brings me to one of my questions here. I was going to say, rather than making an independent movie about making a Christian independent movie to make money, were you ever legitimately tempted just to make the bad Christian movie, Prayer in Space?
Well, the movie that we're making within the movie is called A Prayer in Space, and it's the story of the first prayer ever to be told in space.
Yeah.
No, kind of. Actually, the very original idea before I ever wrote the script or anything, we actually had an idea for a TV show that was kind of the same plot, like the same plot. And our idea with the TV show, we pitched it to like two people. And the idea of that, it was actually instead of A Prayer in Space, there was actually that actually stemmed because we needed to like figure out a budget situation. And so that was easier to film, which actually was a much funnier idea. Prayer in Space is funnier, but the original script, the movie we were going to make in the movie was called Angel on the Farm. And it was about a city girl named Roxy who gets into trouble and is forced to go live on her grandfather's farm, where she meets a talking horse named Angel who teaches her that there's a higher purpose.
Okay. Time out. Yeah. That is so
Which,
close
funny enough,
to a real Christian
dude,
movie.
No joke. Well, after we had switched it to A Prayer in Space and started to make Faith-Based, all of a sudden I'm looking at PureFlix stuff just for inspiration, and I see this movie and I'm like, oh my God, I forgot what it's called, but it's like, this is the plot of the other fake movie we were going to make, but it's a real terrible Christian movie. Their horse doesn't talk. Our horse would have talked. I should clarify.
Right.
Much higher production value. But what is funny, though, is our original idea when we were going to pitch it as a TV show, the idea was that if they gave the budget for a TV show, which is obviously a much bigger budget than we had on our micro budget feature, we wanted to make Angel on the Farm as well, like at the same time.
That's
fucking
genius.
So we like really shoot Angel on the Farm and then release Angel on the Farm like 2 months before the TV show would come out. And so all these real Christians are like buying Angel on the Farm. And then 2 months later, like a TV show comes out that's like, this was all fake.
Yeah. You gullible rubes.
You idiots.
You fucking bought our junk.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about calling it Mission Trip to Mars?
Mission Trip to Mars. No, but I like that quite a bit.
Yeah.
We've had a good amount of like hindsight jokes that I'm like, damn it. Like somebody making a comment, I'm like, oh my God, how did we not get that in there?
Yeah.
But yeah, what can you do?
You, here's the thing, man. If you need to lampoon Christianity, there's no one better to ask than a white podcaster in Ohio.
Yeah. Well, I definitely have made the connections that if we ever get a sequel or a TV show, I got a dozen people that I'm going to bring into this. There's people that have the best ideas.
Yeah. Okay. I've got so many questions for you and I don't want to keep you all day. There's a couple of lines in this movie that I thought were legitimately laugh out loud funny to me.
Oh, thanks.
You have a line in the film where you say, I want to make the greatest movie Jesus has ever seen. I want to make the best movie Jesus did, presupposing that Jesus had ever seen him, has ever seen a movie. And that level of humor is, I feel like, kind of hard, where the there's the obvious joke of it, which is that's just a very stupid fucking thing to say. But there's the underneath joke of it is that this idiot, because you kind of play an idiot, right?
Sure.
Who has to, over the course of the movie, get his shit together. And the one thing that I would say to people who haven't seen Faith-Based is, I think a lot of times when Christianity or the white evangelical subculture is being kind of lampooned or satirized, it almost kind of feels like it's punching down a little bit. It's done in a very, kind of takes away the humanity of the people who are a part of those worlds. Your movie actually goes out of its way to not do that. The things that you're making fun of, you are making fun of, but you're also making fun of the non-religious characters as well, and Hollywood, in independent filmmaking, and Christian filmmaking, and just sort of bullshit culture, hucksterism, it's social media influencer, pyramid scheme bullshit. And you're making, but you're also sort of imbuing a little bit of humanity into some of these Christian characters. And I honestly really respected that. So we're going to get into some of the jokes a little bit. I don't want to spoil the movie, but I don't want people to take away the assumption of like, you're just kind of an asshole with an axe to grind against Christianity.
Sure.
Because those movies do exist. That's not what this movie is.
Yeah, it was a tricky, like, to be totally honest, if we had only made this movie to make money, like to do well financially, we would have been much better off either just making a Christian movie, obviously, or honestly making a really mean-spirited, like, decimate Christianity sort of movie.
Yeah.
And that wasn't what I was trying to do. It was like, while I'm not religious anymore, I very much grew up in that world. I have lots of family and friends that are still in that world.
Yeah.
And I more wanted to touch base on the problem that I see as the consumerism of Christianity,
right,
which is people basically trying to take advantage of the consumer base that is people like my dad who tend to support every Christian movie or every Christian artist of whatnot. And I think there's a combination of people who maybe are somewhat earnest in their wanting to make an actual good Christian movie, but are going about it in the wrong way. And there's other people that are just straight up snakes who are just seeing this as a thing to take advantage of. And so I didn't want the movie to feel mean-spirited. We wanted to make a movie that kind of, if anything, was more of a buddy comedy that has a lot of heart, that kind of uses this funny world of Christian movies as a framework and a backdrop. And so, you know, I know for a fact, like, it's interesting. There's people that love the movie, call it one of their favorite movies. There's people that definitely wanted it to be way more harsher. And there's parts of it that I would have probably, like, doing it again, I would have, like, maybe cut a little deeper onto. But for the most part, I'm happy that we made something that's not a mean-spirited movie.
Well, I think what you've done is you've made a movie where someone who is not religious at all but is just likes comedy movies or whatever could watch it. So it's not so inside baseball. It's not inaccessible.
Yeah.
But it's also, if you know, you know, if you're even if you're still a part of that world, there's some really cutting jokes that don't feel like you're punching down or that you're overtly mocking people's beliefs.
Yeah. Well, I think it was also important, like you kind of commented on my character, obviously being a little bit dumb. It's like the thing I really wanted my characters to be in it is earnest. It's like I wanted him, even if he's doing the wrong things, you know, or even if he's literally like an idiot in certain ways, this guy is at a point that, like, what do you call it, a quarter life or midlife crisis? He's at a place of just like has to do something,
and is
genuinely trying to make that happen.
Yep.
You know,
one of probably one of the most cutting scenes in the movie was where, like, you're really kind of getting to the bone of it is the scene where you go to the distributor, Christflix, I think, and you're talking to Margaret Cho as one of the executives, and just the, I don't want to spoil it, but the sort of, there's a couple different gambits that are going on in the scene. There's what your characters, there's the gambit you're playing, and there's the obvious gambit that these other people are playing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the lines that really got me, I was like, this guy, this is some real inside. This guy gets it. Is when she says, you know, like whatever, you know, research shows that most people become Christians when they're 3 years old or when they're facing death. So we need we need peril in the movie, right? Uh-huh. And the only note that I would add to that is you're forgetting when you're 14 years old and your hormones your hormones are raging, your frontal lobe is soup, and there's a bonfire at somebody's backyard and you're burning CDs. That's the other time in which you become a Christian, right?
That's true. Well, I consider that becoming a Christian again.
That's right.
Because most of those people had already done it when they were three. But that is correct. That should have that's another one that, like, in hindsight, I would have added the high school youth conference where we're all rushing to burn our Rage Against the Machine CDs.
Acquire the fire, baby. Okay. Yeah. So in Faith-Based, you name check some very real Christian movies. And then you also make some up, right? Uh-huh. So when, as a writer, when you're satirizing something, when do you choose to directly name an example and when do you choose to make something up? Is it just what's funnier or how do you decide to do that?
Well, for me, that was very intentional in the sense that, like, I think what the funniest part about so many of the real Christian movies is that I could make up multiple fake Christian movies. Yes. And somebody who's not deep in that world wouldn't know which is which.
Correct.
And so it was like I wanted to do – you know, I think we mentioned like God's Not Dead. We mentioned Fireproof. We mentioned War Room.
Kirk Cameron gets name checked. Kevin Sorbo.
Yeah, Kirk Cameron, Fat Sorbo, Superman. Dean Cain. Yeah, Jesus. I half felt bad about that one. There's a one where he's trying to think of who Dean Cain is, and he says Fat Superman, and I kind of felt bad for a second, and then I saw him on Twitter like going on this like super homophobic rant, and I was like, never mind.
Yeah, fuck.
Like I don't know why I'm like fucking feeling bad for calling Dean Cain fat.
That was another one that got me. Yeah. What's his name? Superman.
Fat Superman. But then we have these fake ones where, like, at one point, my dad, who's my adoptive dad, who's played by the amazing Lance Reddick.
Oh, we're gonna get to him. Lance.
He tells the story about this one movie called Love Is Underground about a group of, I think, like firefighters, like stuck in a tunnel who found Jesus or something.
Yes.
And I was just like, this is not that far off from all these Kirk Cameron movies. And then, like, people who have, like, watched the movie and paused it, it's like in the Christflix office there's all these fake posters, and there's like Jesus Plows, which is like a farming drama, and then there's like all these things. But my favorite one that nobody ever notices is there's one called like Escape the Cross, and it's literally like a Christian version of Saw.
We had this whole
bit. It was just too long to make the cut, but like Margaret Cho goes on this whole pitch of Escape the Cross where she's basically talking about how, like, these two guys built a cross in their garage. They made the movie for, like, you know, $10,000. Like, the whole movie is just Jesus trying to escape this cross. Like, it's literally Christian Saw.
Oh,
and it made me laugh so hard how she delivered it all. But it was just, like, a four-minute monologue. So it was just, we couldn't keep it. But maybe one day in the behind the scenes.
Well, she's great in the movie. So we're going to get to the cast here, but... as a writer, when you have so much to lampoon about a subculture, right, and culture at large, because this, like I said, this movie's not just like taking shots. You're not just dunking on Christian movies. The movie is bigger than that. It is about friendship. It is about these two guys. It's about father-son relationships. It's got heart in it. It's about just movie making. It's you know, you got Jason Alexander turns up in it and he has nothing to do with the Christian plot whatsoever.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot, you're satirizing a lot of like, not just the Christian subculture, but the culture at large that we currently live in. How, as a writer, like how difficult is it to know like when to focus or when to zoom out?
Yeah, I don't know. Again, I think it comes down to like, ultimately what we wanted to make was a heartfelt buddy comedy. So we were inspired by movies like, you know, Wedding Crashers and Dumb and Dumber and Old School and stuff like that. And then basically were those movies take something like weddings as their kind of backdrop and their framework for Wedding Crashers, for example. We wanted that to be this industry that we just saw, noticed a lot of fodder and a lot of like really fun to be had in. And so I think that's, I think the more we could focus on the story being about my relationship with my dad and my relationship with my best friend, and then everything else is jokes and added to that, yeah. I think the more focused it could be. Because you're right, it's like, it's a lot of moving parts and a lot of different things that are happening and being talked about. So I think the more we could focus on those two elements, the stronger the story could be, hopefully.
Mm. So speaking of Christian movies, since you have a background in it, how familiar are you with the different epochs of Christian films? You know, do you, like, for instance, do you know the 80s Christian movies versus the 90s versus the present day? And really what I'm asking you is, do you know who David A.R. White is?
Oh, yeah. The quick answer is oh, very well.
Because he's been there the whole goddamn ride.
I'm obviously way too familiar. Like, I wrote a movie called Faith-Based about the faith-based genre, so yeah. I've seen hundreds of them. I would say I'm probably, when it comes to, like, 80s and before, it's more like just the Rapture movies that I'm familiar with. I think I'm more like mid-90s on. Yeah. I become super familiar, you know. David A.R. White is – God, man, I have so many thoughts on that one. That's the most interesting. It's interesting. There was a different podcast who had him on and apparently asked him if he'd seen this movie, and he had not seen it yet. Oh, so I'm hoping that one day he sees it.
I was going to ask you, did you try reaching out to him? Because he's the Stan Lee of Christian movies. So did you try to get David A.R. White to do a cameo in this one?
I should have. I did Bad Christian Movies podcast and lampooned his fake John Wick, his Christian John Wick movie. Which I don't know if you saw that, but Beckman. I don't know if that made your guys' top five, but it was definitely something.
That's going to be volume two, and since I had you on the line, I was going to try to get you hooked up for volume two. But
yeah, I'm in. Beckman was something, dude. I couldn't believe it, actually. I could believe it, but I kind of couldn't believe
it.
A
lot of his movies are about him killing people either before his conversion or slightly after his conversion, but he still gets to murder quite a bit.
So after I watched Beckman, I was so, like, what? Like, I was just so thrown off that I literally took like an hour out of my day to listen to him on a podcast talking about Beckman.
Yeah.
Because I needed to know what his mindset was from the conception of that movie through it now being out. I needed to know how he felt about all of it, why he did it. And that's how interesting Beckman is for a Christian movie.
We didn't cover Beckman yet. We did cover, we covered Revelation Road, the beginning of the end or something.
His like post-apocalyptic movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. His Jason.
He's very proud of that franchise. He's very proud of it.
Jason Bourne, Mad Max ripoff with The Boz and WCW wrestler Sting.
I saw the first one. I didn't see the others.
Yeah. Okay. So, but what we did cover was a movie you were just tweeting about, Assassin 33 AD, as directed and written by a man called Jim Carroll. And we had a lot of wild speculation about this movie, where his real life stepdaughter plays the sexy teenager in the Christian movie. And he's also has allegedly a pyramid scheme, marriage boot camp, dating consulting business, not with his wife, with his stepdaughter.
It's
a Terminator style crucifixion Easter movie where they go back in time to stop Muslims from killing Jesus, which is really, I mean, as we talked about in the episode, if your plan is to kill Jesus, it didn't work so great the first time. What makes think if you kill him 3 days earlier, he's just going to rise 3 days earlier? What? Oh my like, God. it's an egregious, well, it's a blasphemous Christian movie.
Knowing that you've already covered it, I won't spend our whole podcast talking about that. But what I think you saw my tweet the other day that like just I went down a real dark rabbit hole of Jim Carroll. I was just like, what is happening right now?
Correct, yes.
And he is really like, when you watch Faith-Based, our movie, and there's the producers, like let's say the Irwin brothers or those guys who I think are doing things wrong in certain capacities, but at the same time, I genuinely at least feel like these are guys who want to make Christian movies. That's for I'm sure also for money, but also yeah. because this is their way of being a pastor or whatever,
right.
you know,
right.
Whatever. I can at least,
they believe the
message.
At least
understand.
Right.
Yeah. I can understand that. I can respect certain aspects of that, even if I think you could do it better.
Yeah.
Jim Carroll to me is who Faith-Based was about. Mm-hmm. Like that is the person that is just strictly sees this as a way to make money. He's now re-releasing that movie under a more Christian friendly title. So now instead of Assassin 33 AD, it's Black Easter. And instead of the poster that's just like sci-fi space looking, it's more of like a Passion of the Christ ripoff. And it's just, this is a guy that is literally hoping that when that's in Walmart, and it will, it'll go to Walmart and it will all of a sudden make 100 times more money than it probably made the first time.
Yeah.
But this is a straight up snake oil salesman. I've also, you know, become friendly with a couple critics who reviewed Faith-Based, who then, when that movie came out, sent me these emails from him where he, every critic that gave it a bad review, he would send this furious email to them, like trying to get them to take their review down and calling them like, you know, worshipers of Satan and all this stuff who are doing the Satan's work by stopping his message. It was just like bananas, man. I did sign up for his dating situation though, even though I'm married, and I was like, this is actually a pretty good. He's got a good algorithm.
Okay, any trepidation in mocking the living God, or even the scarier demo of the urban hipster Christian?
No, not at all. I think most of the urban Christians, at least, like they like the humor, they get it.
Yeah.
They probably like the movie more than most people. The people that like didn't like the movie or never even saw the movie, but said bad things about the movies, were definitely like the older or more so the just much more conservative Christian crowd. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, like I don't know if you saw, but like before the movie was even made, like the first day it was announced that it was going to be made in like the Hollywood Reporter, Fox News, Breitbart, like all these places did all these articles about it, and it was just like, you've never seen the movie. And they were calling us all these names.
I do
and
remember
stuff,
that, yeah.
It was wild.
Yeah. I remember yeah. that. Yeah. I was like, yeah. I
just off the title.
Yeah. You are now officially an entrant in the culture wars, my brother.
Yeah. I'm on the bench, but that's fine.
Okay, so let's do this. Let's talk about this cast, because this cast is pretty fucking stacked. I want you to drop some names of maybe just 20 people who are in this movie, because you were able to assemble a legit cast.
I couldn't believe it, to be honest. Like yeah. I've gotten to be a part of, you know, as a producer, maybe like six independent films, and this was the first time that it's ever happened this way, where just kind of everybody said yes. Like, we're not, you know, in the world of independent film, we shot on a true micro budget.
Yeah.
Like, people wouldn't believe what we shot that movie for. Basically, credit cards. And so no one from the cast to the crew is doing that movie for the paycheck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're not able to offer somebody $100,000 or something to come out for your day, let alone you can't offer somebody $20,000.
Right.
And so it was just very cool. But yeah, it's crazy. It's like the obvious is Jason Alexander, George Costanza, who's just genuine. I like my favorite character from my favorite sitcom. So that was just a dream.
And you had a one-on-one very long scene with him, and he's going ham in that fucking scene, man.
He is so good, man. and he's such a good, he was the nicest guy ever. He, you know, when the movie came out, you know, and he's, like you said, he's in one really huge scene, and then he's kind of like in it in these little interstitials throughout the movie. But he's not, you know, he's not one of the lead roles or something. And when the movie came out, he did Late Night with Seth Meyers. He did, you know, all this press. He was just like so down to like be supportive of the project. And even when we shot with him, he was such a, opposite of a diva. Like, the guy never went to his room. He would, like, in between stuff, he would go sit in where everybody else was, like, while they're setting up. Like, he's playing piano, telling stories about Seinfeld. Like, it was, he was just such a,
he seems to be having
such a great guy.
The time of his life on in this fucking movie. Like, he seems more than game. He is going for it with his character. Because his character, I don't want to spoil anything, but his character is fucking insane.
So that was such a, like, honestly, we were trying to cast that we had a list. We had this, I'll never forget this. We had an Excel sheet of different characters of, like, kind of dream cast, and they would go, the list would go from, like, totally out of reach, you know, just like dream person, down to, like, all right, who's a realistic sort of could actually might do this. And I'll never forget this. Like, you know, the top three on our list were, like, Jason, Danny DeVito, and maybe, like, Steve Buscemi was, like, one of our three. And I'll never forget, like, we had an executive producer that was had to approve it all, and he basically wrote next to Jason's name, perfect but impossible. And so, like, when that happened, it was just, like, such a, like, couldn't believe it moment. But yeah, he was the best. And then we had my dad is played by Lance Reddick, who if the name doesn't immediately make you think of who he is, he's the concierge in all the John Wick movies. He's one of the stars of The Wire.
The Guest. And, yeah.
The Guest.
Which
we covered
on the show, yeah.
Oh, I love The Guest. And it was interesting. That was, like, an interesting thing, too, because he, I'm white, he's black, and it was kind of important to us. We had never, when we first sent him the offer, we got a call from his agent, and his agent said, hey, Lance loves the script. He wants to play Nikki Steele, which is the character that Jason ended up playing. And he was like, yeah, I've never done something like that. It's super weird. And honestly, we said, if Lance wants to play Nikki Steele, Lance can play Nikki Steele, but could we talk to him? And we got on this call with him and basically said to him, look, you've seen a million movies where a fluent white family adopts an African or poor a black kid. You've never really seen a story where an affluent black family adopts a white kid who let alone turns out to kind of be the failure of the family. And so he was like, all right, I like that. Let me chew on it. And then he, like, 2 days later, we get a call. It's like, Lance doesn't want to play Nikki Steele. He wants to play Pastor Mike, your dad. And so it was just, he was just also just, like, so dedicated. Like, you'll never meet somebody. That guy would call me, like, 2 weeks out, like, working on scenes. Like, hey, what do you think? And I'm like, dude, I don't know. I wrote it, and I'm not even working on it right now. He was so good and so prepared. So he's great. And then it's, you know, we had a one day with David Koechner, who's, like, champ in The Office and Anchorman. He's great. And then Margaret Cho plays kind of the CEO of Christ Flix, which is clearly, like, a Pure Flix knockoff.
Yeah. And what I would say is, like, you know, those are maybe some of the most, I don't even really want to say notable names, because there's some other people who turn up in the movie who are playing pivotal roles, who are playing your cast, who are playing the people.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I know that person. I know who that is. Or I've seen that person. That, you know. So you got your cast is loaded with actual working
if
actors.
If anything, I was kind of bummed for all of those people. Like, they all love the movie. They're all super supportive. They were all, like, had a great time. But, like, because of all the Jasons and stuff, you know, those people don't get mentioned as much. And they were so down and so good. Like, you know, almost we tried to make it so that, like, because originally we were going to shoot this movie for $10,000 on iPhones and just improv the whole thing with just our friends. And when it kind of got bigger and bigger in terms of cast and stuff, we had the real conversation of, like, should we cast Luke and Tanner as much more famous people? Which we probably should have. But at the same time, we kind of looked at it like, we're best friends in real life.
Yeah.
And this movie is so small that it's going to be so kind of run and gun and rough. We kind of looked at it like, we'll anchor it with the more, like, grounded, real friendship.
Yeah, right.
And then we can surround ourselves with much more notable people who kind of bring it up a level. And so that's kind of what the plan was. And I think it worked. Like, but yeah, you have, you know, the guy in the church who Tanner kind of becomes friends with is Christoph Sanders, who's funny enough is one of the stars of the Tim Allen show Last Man Standing. And so when he came on board, there was lots of Last Man Standing fans that were like so excited for Christoph to be in a faith-based movie. So like country, like when his announcement came out, the first place to write it up was Country Living. Country Living is like a huge fan of him and a huge fan of Last Man Standing. And so they were like, Christoph to be in this faith-based movie. And all the comments are like people thrilled with Christoph being in this faith-based movie. And I just need to like hear one story. I still haven't heard it yet. I need to hear one story of somebody just like pumped, getting their popcorn, hitting play, and then just like, what?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, like, you go through your cast, you go through, and every scene, somebody different turns up, and these are people who are in major television shows or who are longtime character actors who you have seen a thousand times.
Totally. You know? Like, the in the Christflick scene with Margaret, the other actor there is Chris Marquette, and he was the star, one of the stars of our first movie, Fear Inc., so we obviously, like, know him really well, but... That's a guy that, like, when we first met with him for Fear Inc., he walked in and I was like, just friends, the girl next door. Yep. Like, I knew, like, you know, I grew up watching him. And so for him to be now kind of a friend of ours that we can throw into these funny scenes, it's great.
So we always try to go a little meta, a little macro on this show. And if we have somebody who's actually involved in the industry in any capacity, we always try to do a little bit of a zoom out. And going through your career, your trajectory, you've been on television, which is, you know, traditional old school media. You have, you know, been in, you know, on sitcoms, TV shows, whatever. You've obviously tried to develop shows, as you've talked about. So you've been a part of that pipeline system. You have done a lot of short comedy shorts, which is a repetitive way of saying it. So like at the kind of the nascent days of the internet too, in the early 2000s, you're out there and you're doing, you know, Funny or Die sketches or this, that, or whatever. And, when that was sort of a brand new kind of a thing, you've done independent film. So you've done, mainstream film stuff. You've done the whole gamut of entertainment over the last 20 years, let's say. Where do you see the industry going? And as you've been through it all, what are kind of the pluses and minuses of everything you've experienced? And where do you see, like, the industry going, you know, now in, like, 2021, especially post-COVID?
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest negative, and this is more specifically with film more so than TV, you know, because TV is just nothing. TV right now is as gravy as it gets. Like, TV is just... There's never been better TV. There's never been more TV. There's never been more places doing TV. Like, that's a world that I hope to one day get more into. Like I said, like, you know, we develop stuff, you pitch stuff, you hope that one of them kind of happens. But until that happens, it's just an idea. But that's kind of almost the dream in the sense that, like, I think TV for so many more famous people or for really successful people, TV is the way to have the ability to do all the other stuff, whether you're creating a TV show, writing on a TV show, a series regular on a TV show. Those are all the ways that you're all of a sudden consistently making a large amount of money. And so then you can kind of do whatever you want. So TV, that's the dream. I think movies, the biggest negative where I see it right now and where I see it even going more so is I think we have fully lost the ability for there to be a real middle class of filmmaking. And I think people used to think of that by middle class, I meant like $15 million budget movies, but I don't even mean that. I more mean like the industry as a whole right now is very much you are poor until you're rich. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of like ways in strictly like making movies to make, let's say, $75,000 to $100,000 a year. You know what I mean? You're either the people that are in that world of like making what would have at one point kind of been considered just like middle of the road income. You know, you can do Lifetime movies, Hallmark movies, But like even that, it's like then you risk, are you not going to be able to get the better job because your resume is now that you direct or write or whatever Hallmark movies.
Yeah, like you're right.
You don't see somebody going from like doing six Hallmark movies to doing like a really cool Sundance movie or like a big, huge studio movie. So you're like, oh, do I take that job? And then there's the movies that are like, you know, the industry that's like the Bruce Willis action movie that is literally its own ecosystem now,
right,
of
yeah.
these movies that have like aging action stars, Sylvester Stallone, Bruce Willis, Dolph Lundgren, where they'll pay you $50,000, $100,000 to go write or direct one of those movies. But again, you're like, ah, now you're the guy that did all these straight to DVD terrible Dolph Lundgren movies. You're not going to then get the cool movie, you know?
Right.
So it's like in this weird way, we've lost this way to just kind of like make middle income. So you're kind of like doing independent stuff that is hopefully weird and good until someone gives you like a TV show or a big movie. You know what I mean?
So like the journeyman sort of craftsman plying your craft, actors, directors, producers, writers, that basically that middle ground doesn't really exist anymore.
It doesn't really, it only exists in these weird little specific ecosystems. And I think that's like a kind of a bummer because now, but what goes along with that, where I'll go in the positive, where that stems from is that now you can make a movie for so much less. So like, you know, if the budget of a movie is $150,000, which you can now make a movie for less than that even, there's no world in that movie where somebody is making $50,000. You know what I mean?
Right.
So therefore the negative is that we've cut out this kind of ability to make middle-class income in independent film. The positive is now you can go make a legitimately good movie that could go to South by Southwest for $100,000. And so I think like where I'm kind of experiencing it right now is I think that there's for future stuff moving forward, like the stuff we're working on, I think we look at it like our next movie, we're either going to go make for like over $2 million where like everybody can get paid real money. All these things can happen, or we're going to go make it for like $100,000. Like we're going to go make it for an amount that's so low that everybody has back end. And then if the movie goes on to make a lot more than that, everybody gets their money there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But gone to me are the days of just making like an $800,000, $1 million movie where everybody can kind of like, you know, sneak by, you know?
Right. Yeah. We had Sean Cawthon on, who was a documentarian and did some documentaries. He did The Orange Years, it was about Nickelodeon or whatever. And he said it's pretty much the same thing for documentaries. There's been this explosion in docs in the last 10 years, let's say. But the middle class doc doesn't exist anymore. It's either super, you know, like you said, running gun.
You're making it for $5,000.
Correct. You know? Yeah. Credit card, you're funding yourself, and all the money is made on the back end. You give people points. Nobody makes anything up front or very little up front, you know, and then, you know, scale or whatever. And then the money's in the back end. Or you're having Brad Pitt, who's like, giving you like, well, here's $60 million to make a documentary.
Yeah,
or something.
It's a Netflix docuseries original or whatever.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So that seems to be like an industry-wide thing, right?
It feels that way for sure.
Yeah. So what is next for you, my friend? What do you got going on? What are you working on? Are you going to be directing anything? Are you acting anything? And what do you got coming up? And also, when did you recognize that you do look like Sean Penn?
It's funny, man. Like depending on hair and glasses and stuff, it's like a Sean Penn or Christian Slater all day long.
Oh, I can see a little Christian Slater.
But the Sean Penn I get more than anything else. And I think it's just because we are ruggedly handsome guys. You know what I mean? There's only so many of us. I think there's a joke, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I think there's a joke in Faith-Based that's like, you look like Sean Penn if Sean Penn had a nut allergy and couldn't change a tire.
Correct.
It's like,
yes.
The
whole time I was watching the movie, I was like, this guy looks familiar. This guy looks familiar. This guy looks familiar. This guy looks, but I was like, not just like I've seen you in things. It was like, he looks like somebody.
Somebody else.
And as soon as that line came out, I was like, Jesus Christ, he does.
That's it. One day. I mean, if this could just lead to me playing his brother in one thing, you know.
If they ever do a Fast Times table read for charity or whatever, and they can't get in, God. You got to fucking do it, bro.
Bring it. Yeah. we're writing a lot right now. So like there's two things that we're kind of in the process of taking out and pitching. One of them is like a super heartfelt kind of sci-fi dramedy with a talking robot. And okay. the other one you'll like is a horror movie set entirely in the world of pyramid schemes and self-help.
Yes.
And that's the one that I'm kind of hoping I could see getting some light for sure.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm going to.
No.
You've done a lot of different genre stuff. Right. So,
yeah,
you're a funny guy. Right. And you've done a lot of comedy. You've done a lot of that. You've done horror. You've done this. You've done that. What is a genre that you haven't worked on that you want to? And coupled with that, how do you self-identify yourself? Are you a polymath, or do you see yourself as more of like, my preferred career trajectory is performer? Is it screenwriter? Is it director? Is it producer? What do you want to do? And what genre do you want to work in?
Yeah. In terms of how I consider myself, I definitely consider myself like, I guess a writer producer first, like a creator of sorts. Like I like to write. I think the producer aspect of it is just the idea of trying to put it all together, like try to make it happen. So it's like, I like to create stuff. And so I think writing and producing really go hand in hand when it comes to writing something and then figuring out like, how do we make this happen? How do we find a good director? How do we find the Jason Alexander? How do we find the money? So I guess writer producer is kind of my main thing. I like acting a lot. I like performing. I like doing stuff. Once I started to kind of create my own stuff, I had less desire to just like pursue the traditional auditioning for CSI and stuff like that path of actors, like tons of respect for it. I'll do it if somebody asks me, but at the same time, that's not where I think I'm better at writing and producing than I am probably at least as an auditioner. So that's kind of that. And then in terms of genre, I'd like to work in, I really like, I mean, I guess I have done it, but I do like dark comedy a lot. Like I think when you can like ride that genre line of being like really funny at certain moments and really dark at certain moments, it's just an interesting roller coaster. And so that's where I want to keep kind of pushing in some capacity. But in terms of just a straight genre I've never gotten to do that I think would be interesting to work in is like, I know there's a ton of it right now, but like space sci-fi is just something that I think it would be fun to find a different movie. Like I feel like it's so often is the kind of like gravity Martian, like person, right. You know, has to accomplish a mission sort of thing. I think it would be fun to like think of a something in space that kind of has nothing to do with that. That's just like a normal story that could take place somewhere else, but happens to be happening in space. I think would be interesting.
Mission trip to Mars, brother. Mission trip to Mars.
We did have a moment of like, should we do a short that's just a prayer in space? Like, you know, like more of that into like an actual well-produced short.
Here's the pitch. We discover there actually is life on Mars. And evangelicals raised the funds to be the first missionary to reach the unreached people group of the Martians. And then the tagline is, when a short-term mission goes long-term, because they get stranded on Mars. And you could do
and
a
then
whole...
It's like Book of Mormon meets the Martian.
Yes. Meets Jim Elliot.
Gosh. Meets End of the Spear.
End of the Spear. This guy knows.
My dad sent me the DVD, brother.
Here's the thing. The ship that goes to Mars could be called the Spear. And it'd be such an inside reference that people would know. Right.
Only you, me, and like 12 other people would be like, it'd be the Leonardo DiCaprio meme of just like,
Well, look, brother, I find you to be a very charming motherfucker, and you're very charming on screen.
That's kind.
You're very
nice, dude.
You're very
you,
charming on screen. So I know you see yourself as a writer producer, and I wish you all the best in that. And there's some really great jokes in this movie that really fucking land that you don't have to be an ex-evangelical to be able to understand or find humor in. But I would say don't sell yourself short as far as the screen presence, man.
You got a
quality about you. There's a likableness to you. There's an ease to your performance, and I can't wait to see what you're going to do and what you got coming up. And anytime I can harangue you to come on and shit on some movies or talk about movies you love. I mean, this is not just a bad movie podcast.
Yeah, I love that.
We talk about good movies as well. We talk about the full pantheon of films. And anytime we can have you on and talk about, even if it's just your five favorite
movies.
I mean,
dude, right now, I'm wearing a They Live t-shirt and I got a Monty Python tattoo. So we can...
We've already covered They Live. We've already covered it, of course, because I'm a white guy in Ohio. You don't think I've covered John Carpenter?
Hilarious.
Yeah. So,
well, thanks for having me on, dude. I would love, and if you guys do another round of the top five Christians, I'm in. Dude.
All right. Well, we're looking at 2022 for volume two. So I think we might have to hit you up if you're not too busy.
But I'll also happily talk about actual good movies.
Yeah, I don't want to pigeonhole you to where you're just guy who shits on bad
who comes
Christmas.
In to bash things. Yeah.
Where can people find you? Where should they keep an eye on you as far as the projects you currently have in development? Your IMDb says you got a couple of things in development.
Yeah, we're cooking. We're trying. IMDb is obviously one of them. I'm on Twitter at Luke Barnett. I'm on Instagram at I am Luke Barnett. I have a weird fake TikTok as the hose wrangler at the Four Seasons from the Rudy Giuliani situation that weirdly has a big following. That's just Luke Barnett and otherwise. Twitter's probably where I'm the most active.
Well, Luke Barnett, you're a good brother. Anytime you want to come on, we could do life together. I could love on you. I'd love to do it. This is Akron, Ohio. So if you're ever in the area, if you're ever in the area, hit me up. We'll have a bonfire. I'll get a kid with an acoustic guitar. We'll go back to 1998, brother.
I love it, dude. We'll get some Yingling. It'll be a whole day.
That's right. Great Lakes, my friend. Great Lakes.
Great Lakes. Sorry. I was so close.
Yeah, so close. It was Great Lakes Brewing. We'll get some Dortmunder and we'll sit around. I get a kid with an acoustic guitar. We'll sing some Sonic Flood. Take you back to 1998. Bring your iPhone because we'll have to burn it. Because that's where all your secular
music is. And I'll replace it with my Teen Study Bible.
Yes! Yeah, NIV. NIV, brother.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no other way to be.
And anytime you want to take a purity pledge, this is the place to do it. I know you're married. That might make it a little contentious in your marriage.
It's okay. We're still virgins. We're saving ourselves to perfect.
That's right.
Our daughter was immaculately conceived.
You're a good dude. I appreciate you doing this. I had a hell of a time talking to you. We'd love to have you back on. Folks, Binge Lords, find Luke on Twitter. He's funny. He's insightful. He's a radical California liberal who is a part of the agenda to bring down Christmas. He's a part of the culture war. This is the first enemy of Breitbart or Fox News we've ever had on, and I couldn't be more proud. Follow him. He's funny. He's insightful. It's not just weird ex-Christian shit. It's other stuff going on as well. He's a legit film producer. He's a legit writer, and he's a legit awesome fucking guy. And he legit looks like Sean Penn. Support him. Rent Faith-Based. If you have Amazon Prime, it's included in your subscription. Watch it now. Let me know what you think. Make sure you log in on Letterboxd. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Binge Movies. You can follow him at his Twitter. Tag us both. Let us know what you think of the film. And if you want him on, again, Binge Lords, to be forced to watch five Christian films, rank them and talk about them, then harass him. Just start tweeting at him and then force him to do it in 2022. Make him feel guilty because the seeds have already been planted in his conscience.
Yeah. I've had enough shame in my life.
All right. All right, brother. Well, I really appreciate it. And hopefully we get to catch up with you again in the future. I'm excited to see what the future has for you, my friend.
Thanks so much, man. Have a great Sunday.
Yeah, you too, sir.
That was a blast, dude. Thank you, man. That was super fun. Separated, I cut myself clean from a past that comes back in my darkest of dreams. Been apprehended by a spiritual force and the grace that replaces all the me I behold. Said, 'cause I had to match a rhythm of his belly with my head. Jesus saved.